If you want to pull out your sheet about the six phases, that would be great. Six phases that I gave you last week. How are y'all doing? Let's see here. You got two seats. Ray, you could come here at the end, and you two folks can come around to this table up here. There are two seats, if you don't mind. We're doing this group geography class, so if you want to come around there. Les, can you wave your hand? That's Les. You're going to be sitting at his table right there. Just a reminder, and there is a seat at the end of this. Let's see. Got a seat up here?
Yep.
Okay. There's an extra seat right up here at that table, if you don't mind. Right over there at that table. Just a little reminder of how this class works. You can look at either one of the screens. If you're younger, try to get in a metal chair. Give the softer chairs to the older folks. And you're going to be placed at different tables there. Put your name on your folder if you haven't done that already, and your name on the atlas. So, Rick, you're going to lead that table right there. Ray, this one right here. Ken, you'll be leading that table back there. Joe, right here. Les, you're going to lead the table over there. And then Earl, you'll lead that table right there when I give you your assignment and so forth. Now, look at that sheet we looked at last time about the six phases. Geography is another lens or prism through which you look at the Bible, okay? It's another way you look at the Bible. It's another lens, okay? Come on in, you can take a seat right here behind me, okay? So we may have to put some people on a pew right there. That's okay. So it's another way you look at the Bible. It's another scope or lens you look at the Bible. And so that's why we looked at the six phases of the Bible and its geographic scope. So, remember we started off that the first one, and here's the phases here on the screen. The first one is creation, which takes up the early chapters of Genesis, the Tower of Babel and the flood, etc. So ladies, hold up those. Those are like frames. Les gave me this idea. It's a great idea how to do this. Excellent. So it's the whole world that's in the scope of the early chapters of Genesis. But then in the second phase, it zeroes in on the Fertile Crescent. So bring the frame in on the Fertile Crescent, which is what we call the Middle East today. Okay? So, Catherine, I'll just have you all sit on this pew right up here on the front. Okay? And be part of that group up there. So, the Fertile Crescent is the focus. Abraham, the patriarchs, Joseph goes down to Egypt, all those kinds of events. But then it narrows in on Canaan. The Israelites live in Canaan. They take the Canaan land. Zoom in on closer. Closer there. More to the left. Becca, more to the left. Olivia, can you see Canaan? It's even tighter than that. It's even tighter. I can see the Red Sea. That's not part of Canaan. Excellent. Okay. See that? Everybody look at that. That's the focus on a big chunk of the Old Testament. That's the third phase. It's Canaan. And Israelites live there and they call it Israel. We'll talk more about that in just a second. But then the fourth phase, which is toward the end of the Old Testament, once again, it spreads back out. The focus spreads back out the Fertile Crescent because you have references to the Assyrian Empire and then who take over Israel. And then you have the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire. And so once again, the focus is pulled out just a little bit. And then we come to the New Testament, which is what our focus is in this class. And again, it zeroes in on Palestine. So here we go, girls. Zero in again just on that little sliver of land that now we call Palestine in the New Testament. And this is where Jesus is living. This is where the gospel is first preached. But then, as the New Testament ends, the scope broadens again. Slowly. It broadens slowly from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the ends of the earth, according to Acts chapter 1 and the plan of the gospel spreading. And that leaves us where we are today because post-New Testament, the gospel continued to spread across the whole world. Okay, ladies, thank you very much. Hang on to your day jobs, but very good job. You might have a promising future in game showism. Who knows? Okay. So there's phase six. So we want to start off with some big picture stuff. And I want you to understand and get this point that geography is another way of looking at the Bible and another confirmation of the truth of the Bible. This is not fairy tale information in a land far away, and it's vague. It's detailed. It's specific. And so I want you to think with me for a few minutes here how this works in the flow of things. So you start with the whole creation in Genesis 1. And yes, it's true, Christ came to save people. But look how so many texts reference the physical world. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, John 3:16. Well, we understand that's the people of the world. But typically, we know that means the people of the world, but it's still the term world. And then you got statements like Jesus in Matthew 28, when he commissions the apostles to go out, and he says, and he's the one who has the authority to send them out, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations. Colossians chapter 1, Paul writes about how that these people had received Christ and the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation. Now we understand that trees don't convert to Christ. Rocks don't become followers of Jesus. But look at the language that's used. The Bible is wanting us to think of the whole world here in this. Been proclaimed in all creation under heaven. And speaking of idea of creation, look how this comes full circle. In Christ, if anyone is in Christ, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he is a new creation. The old has passed away, behold, the new has come. Full circle, right? Creation to creation. Creation of the physical world, now to a creation of a new people that belong to Christ. But this process is taking place in this world. So, looking at even the gospel and the whole Bible in terms of geography really has its place. Now, that brings us to this little sliver of land right here that has so much of the Old Testament's attention and then the New Testament when you open it up. So, it's really the same land, but depending where you're at, it's called different things. And the borders change. What's considered Canaan and then what's considered Israel is a little different. So at first, early Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, in the book of Exodus, and even into the invasion of the land, it's commonly known as Canaan. Okay? But then once the Israelites take it, it becomes known as Israel. So the latter part of the Old Testament, it's known as Israel. So if we're talking about a land, and we're talking about Canaan, and if we use the term Israel and we're talking about a land, it's the same land. It's called Israel now because who lives in it? For instance, we keep talking about Asia Minor, and sometimes I'll say something like, well, it's modern-day Turkey. At one point, it was called Anatolia. Lands change in their names. That's just common. So that's the case there. But when we come to the New Testament, we oftentimes call this area Palestine. This was not a term that the people used in the days of Jesus commonly. The Romans used it because it's a Roman name. That's what the Romans dubbed this area, Palestine. The Jews would call this area something different. They would just call, say, Judea or Galilee because it's got all these little regions that you're going to be working with tonight and over the next couple of weeks. But we commonly, just this whole swath, we call it Palestine. Historically now, from that point on in the first century, we call it Palestine. So that's the land we're talking about. That's synonymous with Canaan. That's synonymous with Israel. Now we're calling it Palestine in the New Testament. Now, here's a really good question. I want you to think about this. Because I want this class to be more than just facts and information about places, bodies of water. I want you to plug this into the big picture of the Bible message. It's a really interesting question. Is Canaan, or Israel, or Palestine, is it in the middle of the world? Because when you look at this map, it sort of is in the middle of the world. And this is the common kind of map that we use to depict the world in our culture. It's got some distortions to it. We talked about that the other day. But that's a good question. Well, Maps have orientation. For instance, you may see this map occasionally. This map has become more popular in the last half century because of the rise of Pacific Rim countries like Japan, China, etc., to where you look at the world with the Pacific in the middle and the Pacific Rim countries like the United States, Japan, China being so prominent. Because look here. Look who's in the middle of the world here. Europe. Guess who designed and popularized this map? Europeans. Maybe even subconsciously. You build the world around yourself, right? And if you've ever studied Chinese history, China calls itself the Middle Kingdom. And what they mean by that is we're in the middle of everything. We see them as on the edge. That map, though, puts them in the middle. And you can even have this orientation, right? Who's to say the North Pole should be on the top of the map? So there's different ways you can look at a map, right? But I want you to come back to this question, and that is Canaan, Israel, or Palestine in the middle of the world? Well, I want you to consider this. I don't want you to look at this. I want you to consider this, which is called the Eastern Hemisphere, Asia, Europe, and Africa. Did you know that for most of human history, this is where it was going on? This is where most people lived. This is where most of the technology was developed. This is where most of the written records were. This is where it was going on. Asia, Africa, and Europe. If you get to the edges of these areas, not much was happening. But this is where it was happening, right in here. Okay? North and South America was sparsely populated. North and South America, don't even know when it became populated exactly. Probably a little before the time of Jesus. These people here knew nothing about these people, and these people knew nothing about them. However, people in Europe knew about people in Asia, and people in Asia knew about people in Africa, and people in Africa knew about people in Asia, and so on. You even see that in the Old New Testament. You see all three of those continents in the Old and New Testament, Africa, Europe, and Asia. Nothing about this. People over here really didn't have writing. They didn't have the wheel. They didn't have horses, cows, or oxen. And regarding this part of the world being connected to this part of the world and then the middle of the action, when you take up all of human history, only about 8% of human history involves this part of the world with the rest of the world. So since just only about 1500 AD. These are Johnny-come-latelys. So think about this. If you're in Africa, Asia, or Europe, and you want to go to one of the other continents by land, not by sea, but if you want to go from Asia to Africa by land, through what must you pass? Right through here. If you want to go from Africa to Europe by land, how must you go? What passageway? Through Canaan, Israel, or Palestine? Yeah, you can go across the Mediterranean by ships. They did that all the time in the Roman era. You can go from Africa and the east coast here of Africa to India on the Indian Ocean. They did that in late ancient times, okay? But by land, if you wanted to go from A to B, continent-wise, look who's right in the middle. Canaan, Israel, Palestine, it's a land bridge. In his book called Cities of the Biblical World, DeVries says, no land has ever been shaped by a broader array of forces than biblical Palestine. It's in the middle of what's going on. That's not by accident. That's purposeful. That's providential. So when you look at that little sliver of land there that Becca and Livia framed for us, it looks so insignificant. It is far from insignificant in its location, as well as what's happening in that land, on that land. So, Okay, before we dive into the new material, observations, questions so far? Okay, all right. You've got a sheet lying in front of you. If you don't, raise your hand. I've got extras. Everybody have a blank map, right? Okay, blank map of Palestine. Yeah, we're going to start small on the New Testament and work outwards. Why? Because that's how the New Testament starts. It starts in a very narrow strip of land right there called Palestine. So we're going to introduce this idea of where Jesus lived. We're going to actually work on Jesus's Palestine, the Palestine where he lived, for about three lessons. But this is our introduction. And you could say this is where Jesus lived, but that sort of implies he's not lived any other place when he was only there a very, 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 very tiny amount of time. So I like the expression, this is where he walked and he served when he was on earth. So what we're going to do is I'm going to have you to label your map with these areas that frame Jesus' movements. So this is a summary of where Jesus was and where he went from the beginning to the end of his time on earth. So, first of all, there's Judea. And Judea is important because this is where it starts and this is where it ends. So, Daryl, will you turn to Matthew 2? And Jesse, will you turn to Matthew 20? Those references are on the screen. So Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. Daryl, you have that for us. Go ahead and read it when you have it.
Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem.
All right. So star there, some significant cities. That's where Bethlehem is. It's in Judea. It's in the hill country of Judea. More about the hill country later. So that's where Bethlehem is. That's where he is born. But Judea is also significant because he would make trips to Jerusalem frequently in his lifetime. We know four times in his lifetime that he goes, maybe five, that he goes to Jerusalem. But we're assuming the years that are not covered by him, like when he's 18 and 20, he's also going on occasion. Like all faithful Jews make their pilgrimages to Jerusalem. So, Jesse, look at the role of Judea in Matthew 20, verse 17 to 19. This is Jesus predicting what's going to happen.
Now Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests, to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify. And on the third day, he will rise again."
All right, thank you. Don't miss how that in some texts, the place is so emphasized. Twice Jerusalem is mentioned in that text. Jesus is going up to Jerusalem and he tells them, "We're going to Jerusalem." It's like, okay, yeah, we know that. But he is emphasizing, this is where I'm going to be put to death. It's where it starts, that's where it ends. And he's there often. He's there sometimes for long stretches of time. Teaching, doing miracles. You read about that in all four Gospels. But there is one place he went outside of Palestine a great ways, and that's Egypt. So far, that is not on this map. So you have to sort of just write it in there where you think it sort of is, although that right there is not even to scale. It's plumb off the screen. So Matthew chapter 2, in verse 13... Elaine, you got your Bible open there. Will you read Matthew 2, verse 13? Why is it that Jesus ends up in Egypt? Go ahead.
"Now when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him.'"
All right. The they were the wise men who Herod was trying to use to track down where this Messiah was that he heard was born. The wise men go back another way. They dupe Herod. And the angel of the Lord has Joseph to take this young family down into Egypt. There was a pocket of Jews that still lived in Egypt from the intertestamental period. So this is the southern extent. There are two core territories in which Jesus operated, where he spent most of his time. One was Judea. We'll look at the other one in just a second. But he has several years in Egypt. We don't know how long, but he has several years of his childhood in Egypt. But that was his only far-flung foreign foray. Wow, I didn't mean for that to all be F. Sorry about that. But that's his only far-flung foreign foray. That's the only time he goes a long way into another country, to another land, another region. Other than that, he stays around Palestine. I want you to soak on that. Don't raise your hand, but anybody here ever said, I've never got to go anywhere in my life. Okay, just think about that. Just think about that and look at Jesus here. So, third of all, Galilee. You know that was coming. That's the other core territory. Actually, that's where most of the Gospels are focused. That's where Jesus does most of his teaching. That's where he does most of his miracles. And all the different villages and towns and cities near or around Galilee. Nazareth, Bethsaida, Capernaum. On and on and on. Matthew 2. You got that, Andrew? Matthew 2, 22 to 23. You got something handy or not handy? Okay, Ray, you got that? Matthew 2, 22 to 23. I'll come back to you, Andrew, and get you for Matthew 4, okay? Matthew 2, 22 to 23. What does that say? Why do they end up in Galilee? He's born in Bethlehem. They go to Egypt, and then what happens?
But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. And he went and lived in the city called Nazareth, so that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled, that he would be called Nazarene.
This is Joseph taking Mary and Jesus back to Nazareth, where they're from. All in fulfillment of prophecy and also because of the danger yet down in Judea because of Herod's son. And then we read what? Matthew 4, verse 23, Andrew.
And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all kinds of sickness and all kinds of diseases among the people.
Very big summary statement, but that really sums up a big chunk of Jesus' earthly ministry. He's in Galilee, teaching the gospel of the kingdom and doing miracles and healing of people. But even when he's operating in Galilee, he has some short trips. Not really short for them because they're on foot, but relatively speaking, short. Okay, and I got to start there for Nazareth. That's where Nazareth is, approximately. Well, one of those, okay, first of all, we have this situation. John chapter 4. Sandy, can you turn over that and read that? I see you got a Bible open. Samaria lies between Galilee and Judea. It's a mixed breed group of people from the Old Testament. They have a little Jewish blood in them, but mostly pagan. And their religion was mostly pagan with a little Judaism mixed in. Most Jews despised Samaritans and avoided them, but not Jesus. John 4, 1 through 5.
Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. So he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph.
So when we say something like, I need to drop by Charlotte, I've got to stop at Charlotte on the way, there's probably a reason, like we got to buy something or see somebody. That's not the case with Jesus. Jesus encounters this woman at the well, teaches her about the living water, and even reveals very oddly, he doesn't do this commonly, that he's the Christ. So Jesus interacted with Samaritans. Samaria, though, was the passageway. Most Jews went around it. Some Jews took the spine of the ridge through it. Jesus would stop there and interact with them. By the way, in Acts chapter 8, it's one of the first places the gospel goes after Judea, Samaria, the hands of Philip the evangelist. But Jesus also went up into Phoenicia. And because of time, we're not going to read the references. But this is in three of the gospels. He goes to Tyre, which is one of the old chief cities of the coast there. Coastal people, seagoing people. This is where the Canaanite or Syrophoenician woman wants the daughter healed and all that. That's in Mark chapter 7. This is the northwestern extent. Technically, Egypt is as far east. Egypt is as far west as he went, because Egypt is right down in here somewhere. okay? If you look at my laser here, this is where Egypt is. So that's further west. But in Palestine, that's the northwestern extent. He also goes around the Sea of Galilee or across the Sea of Galilee. This was in the reading over the last couple of days from Matthew 8, where he cast the demons out of the man who was demon-possessed. Actually, it's two men in another text. This is recorded in Mark chapter 7. This is the area called the land of the Gadarenes. Mark 7:31 says, when the man was healed and went into the cities, he went into the Decapolis. Greek, what does that mean? Decapolis. 10 cities. Deca, 10. Polis, city. There's a group of about 10 cities, sometimes less, sometimes more, that were Greek cities. Some Jews lived over there, mostly Greeks. Jesus went over there and preached and did miracles. He also went up to this city built by Herod's son Philip, who ruled over this region. He wanted to honor Caesar, and he also honored himself, Caesarea Philippi. A lot of pagan worship there. This is where Jesus... Sorry, I went too far, didn't I? This is where Jesus goes up to Caesarea Philippi, and it's like a retreat with him and the 12 apostles. And this is where in Matthew 16, he asks them, who do men say that I am? That's as far northeast as he went. And those are the travels of Jesus. That's as far as he went. Thoughts? Observations? Questions? Earl?
You think about the fact that he, along with the Father and the Spirit, that God had created the entire universe, spoken into existence. And earth is the focal point, and when he comes to earth, he's concentrated right there. He's the sovereign God of the universe, but he stays right there.
Humans wouldn't write it that way, would they?
No.
Rick? Hey, Rick?
Did you say he crossed the Jordan?
Several times. I think he's at least gone to the Decapolis area twice. And he probably was over in Perea, which is right here, but we won't worry about Perea right now. But that's the extent. Rick?
Man had wanted to figure out a way to reach everybody. They would try to broadcast everything throughout the whole globe. But the Lord is just planting seed.
Right.
And the seed's going to grow and it's going to increase.
Right. And why not send the Son when the World Wide Web was in existence? So that kind of thinking, but God doesn't think like we think. Because he's not confined by the things we're confined by, Andrew.
I would say that we know in the First Testament what man was thinking. Oh, you're going to create an empire, kick out the roads, and take everything over.
Right, that's what they were thinking. His talking about scope, he using the word scope, his geographic scope was so narrow. Because his scope regarding human attainment was so narrow. If he wanted to conquer the world, he wouldn't stay in this one little place. But he's not after an earthly attainment. That's not what he's trying to accomplish. So it's so amazing. So never complain. I never go anywhere. Okay? Because Jesus didn't go that far. Not really. We'll talk about this in a second. It's roughly 200 miles, depending on where you mark Palestine, 200 miles north to south, 30 miles east to west here and about 60 miles east to west. I've got on the next slide on the bottom part. I mean, it's small. We'll talk more about that in just a second. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. On a pew near you is a piece of poster board. Get it for your table. The nearest pew to you. Yes, Caroline, you're on the ball. Jonathan, excellent. The Messers came in strong tonight. These Messer children are not messing around. Okay, very good. So what you're going to do is you're going to create Palestine poster with panels. You're going to do this as a group. So what are you going to do? You got all the tools you need right there in front of you, including a ruler and all the markers and everything you need. what you're going to do is you're going to divide the poster board into four panels. I'll show you a sample in just a moment. And I'm sorry I put Natalie and Les at the same table. That wasn't the two best artists, probably. Okay. But what you're going to do is divide this poster board into four panels. I'll show you a sample in a moment. You're going to create a map of Palestine in each panel. And you're going to create four depictions of Palestine. For instance, look at your atlas. Look at your atlas. Like, look on page 16 of the atlas, Paul's journeys. No, I'm sorry. That's four empires. Paul's journeys are in the 20s. 26. Page 26 of the atlas. See how that opening has four panels? It's depicting the same region four different ways. That's what you're going to do. You're going to depict Palestine four different ways, providing different information in these panels. Again, I'll show you an example in a moment. Here's what you're going to do with one panel. We need to understand the scale of really how small Palestine is, and you're going to do it to the area that you know, the United States. So, group one, you've got the northeast of the United States, which is like D.C. and above. Group two, you've got the Midwest. If you need help with what the Midwest is, I'll come back by. The West, which is past the Mississippi. Anything you want to do. This group has the Southeast, like Kentucky down to Florida. Over here, this group, and we'll save it. You work with Western North Carolina, and you work with Eastern North Carolina. Because Les is from Eastern North Carolina, and people over here are from Western North Carolina. Here's what you're going to do. Is you're going to go to that area of the United States and look for an area that covers 40 miles wide in the north, 60 miles wide in the south, and 200 miles from north to south. For instance, don't cheat. That's roughly the state of New Jersey.
Hey, you just took mine.
Okay? I said that last week about New Jersey, so that's off limits. You have to find something else in the northeast. So it's roughly the size of Jersey. So you take your map of Palestine and put over it or beside of it the same dimensions of some area in the United States, like from Atlanta down or from like Denver north, to sort of show the comparison. If you took Palestine and placed it in the United States, what would it cover? That's panel one. Yes, use your phones. Yes, you can use your phones. No problem. I will not confiscate your phone. You can use it. Second panel, I want you to list these physical features of Palestine. Third panel, I want you to use the political or list the political regions I've got listed there. Your atlas is there to help you, page 22. And then fourth of all, the movement. I'm glad you're excited about panel one. That's great. But let me finish the four panels. The fourth panel is the movements of Jesus, which you're sort of creating another map like you just did, but now with arrows and labels. So look at the screen. That's what your poster should look like. I want you to use portrait dimension, okay? For instance, can I have this, please? When you create your map, create it like this. Portrait dimensions, portrait configuration. Panel here, there, there, and there. Don't do this, do this. I have a reason for that. Portrait orientation.
Thank you.
That's what it should look like. Everybody got that?